continue our study of Pachad Yitzchak for Purim, Inyan Chav Dalet. The Mishnah in the sixth parak of Avos establishes Kol HaOmer Dover B'Shem Omro Mevi Geula Liolam Shenemar Vatomer Esther LaMalka LaMelech B'Shem Mordechai. It means that someone who quotes someone and he goes back to the original source by transmitting something in the name of someone. I heard it from so-and-so. He doesn't present it as his own, but rather he gives the honest-to-goodness truth that he heard it from so-and-so. That brings redemption into the world. And the two questions are obvious. First of all, what's the big deal here? Why is this geula? The very fact that he mentions the name of the person who originated the idea. And secondly, if there is such a principle as formulated by the Mishnah Avos, is it purely accidental that this principle was formulated in the context or derived from the geula of Purim? There are many other geulos, redemptions, that Klal Yisrael experience. Why is it that the redemption of Purim is singled out to teach us that Dover Homer Ba'olam, this is Geula? So we don't understand on the one hand why it brings Geula to the world. What's the connection between saying something in the name of its originator? And number two, why was this principle formulated in the context of Purim? Obviously it's derived from the Pasuk. Esther told over to Achashverosh about Bigson of the Seresh, who were plotting to kill the king in the name of Mordechai. It was written down in the Sefer HaZichronos. That's going to play a major role as history reveals itself. And because it was Mordechai who did so great for the king wants to reward him, and that's the story with Haman taking the horse and so forth and so on. But it seems more than coincidental for the rational mind to understand why was it. It can't be just chance that this Mevi Geula Lolam is connected to the situation of Purim and Esther. We'll begin our discussion by looking into the Maral Miprag in his commentary on Masechta Avos on this Mishnah of Mevi Geula Lolam, the Maral's commentary, the Derech Chaim of the Maral. The Maral says the following. Now, when you say something in the name of the person who actually came up with this idea and expressed it first, then you're bringing that dibur, that speech, that statement, back to its roots, back to the very neshama, the very essence and soul of the one who originated the idea. We'll call him the Bala Maimer henceforth. And basically what it means is the following. You have a shoresh in this mashal, you have the roots of the tree, and then you have the branches of the tree. The branches have to be connected back to its source, to its roots, to the shoresh. And in the case of something that was said, unless that statement, that maimar, is brought back to its roots by relating it to the one who originated, the Bala Maimer, then it's really cut off from its roots. And that's called golus. Golus means that when a person or a nation is exiled, when they're alienated, they're really alienated from their own essence. They're being subjugated by another nation, and as a result, they are being repressed. And let's understand what the nature of this repression is. A person's essence expresses itself in his dibur, in his speech. The way he talks and the content, the substance of what he says, is a reflection, is a development of his own self. And golus means when you cut off from yourself. Like, for example, the Jews in Russia were called the Jews of silence during the communist era. They couldn't speak out freely. They couldn't express their own natural propensities and essence, their own personality. And that's what we need in the sense of Geula. What is the sense of Geula all about? The experience of Geula means bringing someone back to his freedom, removing all the blocks and the barriers and all the repressions and allowing the person to be free. Here's something that was said and now it's completely cut off from the person. It's like a branch that's cut off from its roots. The person and his neshama can no longer express themselves. Every person has a desire to contribute. And this contribution, insofar as it's made through speech, through transmitting ideas, is supposed to be an expression of that person. It has to be related to that person. And what Golus is when all this is not related to the person, when the individual, or as we said before, the nation is completely alienated from himself, from itself, cut off. In the language of the Pachad Yitzchak, a person who's in Golus has no possibility to really allow his chius, meaning his entity, what defines his special personality and psyche, to be mispashi, to spread itself out. Bet aimless sharshia nefesh atzmiim, just like the roots of a tree spread out in its branches, so too the soul of a person wants to spread out through his dibur. And that's this pashtus chius. And that's golus. Golus is devastating because a person cannot express his own essence. And the Gemara tells us in Masechta Brachos on Daf Yud Zayin that the ultimate level of a person, of a righteous tzaddik, is when he declares Ritzoni lasos ritzonecha, that in truth, God, I want to fulfill your will. What prevents me from doing so? El shibud malchios ma'akev, the barrier that inhibits me and really represses me is the shibud malchus, the fact that we are controlled and subjugated by another kingship. We're in exile. So when we ask the question, what is geula in its very essence? Geula is to return the anof in the branches back to their roots. And in the case of a nefesh, to return the dibur back to the nefesh. And that's what we call amiras dover l'shem omro. Recreate, reestablish that connection between the dibur, the amira, and the baal hamemra. So that you're really giving him back his roots, his shoresh, his source. That's geula. Geula, says the Maharal Miprag, is going back to the source, is allowing that exiled nation to express itself and its very essence in a free way. Now, we could raise the following question on the Pachad Yitzchak to try to delve a little bit deeper below the surface into his meaning. And we wonder, in halacha we have two concepts that are mutually exclusive. One is mikan o lahaba, and the other is lamafreya. Now, I'm not sure when the geula process takes place, the way it's formulated here in the Pachad Yitzchak, when the amira is returned to its shoresh, back to its source, to that nefesh that so desires the return of its chius, so that it could be mispashet, as we spoke about before. What happens at the point of geula? Is geula something that works mikan ulahava, from this moment and on, or is it lamafreya? Are we now going back to the moment in time at the very beginning when the person, the Baal HaMaamar, said what he said? And now we're giving it its chius by returning it to its owner. And perhaps we can get an insight from the next few words of the Pachad Yitzchak in this presentation, which I think is the kishkis, is the essence of what he wants to say. This is what he's leaning to. Because again, the question was not only why is it so significant to the Omer Dover B'Shem Omro, but it also was why the Geula of Purim was singled out, the context and the framework of Purim to teach us this lesson about Mevi Geula Liolam. There were many other Geulos. And here the Pachad Yitzchak says the following, that very often a person doesn't speak freely and express his essence, his neshama, because of an external force, an external pressure that compels him and represses him. And therefore his diburim do not relate to his very essence, to his atzmius. And in the sense, the atzmius of Klal Yisrael, the very perhaps most significant statement that Klal Yisrael ever made in the history of the people, the nation, is Nase V'Nishma. That we love the Torah, we want to accept the Torah, and commit ourselves to its teachings. But yet, Chazal say that Kofa Leim Har Kigigis, they were compelled to accept the Torah, the Nase V'Nishma was blurted out as a matter of compulsion, and therefore Mikan Modah Rabba Lo Raisa. Whenever I enter into an agreement, but under duress, I have a right to submit to the court a modah, which means I have to enter into this agreement because I'm being forced and compelled to do so, on the pain of death perhaps. But nevertheless, I want to let it be known that I'm not interested and it's not really me. There's no true ratzon. It's a ma'akev, it's an onus that's external to me. And if that be the case, then Nase V'Nishma, insofar as it's a kaf aleim, it's a kfiya situation, what we call here in modern Hebrew, in Israel, they talk about kfiya datit. If I'm being forced to say Nase V'Nishma, then it doesn't represent the essence of Klal Yisrael. How can you say that Klal Yisrael reached this lofty level of perfection when they exclaimed Nase V'Nishma, that commitment, that agreement was entered into under duress, and there's a modar rabba lo raisa? But Chazal tell us in Gemara Megillah that hadar kiblua bimeach hashverosh, and this is the entire sugya of Kabbalah Satorah in Shabbos Daf Peches. And the Gemara says that even though the original declaration of Nase V'Nishma was done under duress, Modar Rabba Lo Raisa, but now at the time of Purim, the Pasuk in Megillah Sester says Kibu V'Kiblu, that means Kibu Masha Kiblu Kvar, and this undermines the Modar Do Raisa. This ends the Hadar Kiblu of Bimeach Hashverosh, completely terminates the Modar Raisa. And now basically what happens is that the Dibur of Nase V'Nishma reconnects itself to the very Ratzon, the very essence of the Neshama of Klal Yisrael. There now is a clear-cut relationship between the Nase V'Nishma as a Dibur and that Nekuda, that very special, essential soul or definition of the soul of Klal Yisrael in its very essence, is now connected to the Dibur of Nase V'Nishma. And if Amiras Dover B'Shem Omro means connecting a statement back to its Bala Maimar, then this is the greatest expression of Amiras Dover B'Shem Omro. That Hadar Kimu Kiblua B'Meach HaShverosh means take the Dibur and reconnect it to its sender, to its speaker, to Klal Yisrael. And therefore, once the Dibur of Nase V'Nishma was returned to its source, we begin to understand why this very strong statement in Avos of HaOmer Dov V'Shem Avro was formulated here in the Parsha of Purim. Because Purim itself, the redemption of Purim, represents Hadar Kibluha B'Meach Shverosh. To reestablish the Dibur of Nase V'Nishma as one that reflects and emanates from the essence of Klal Yisrael, from their true, genuine desire of their neshama. And here I just want to mention to you that we discussed earlier whether or not Mevi Geula Liolam, in the case of Omer Dov V'Shem Omro, works L'Mafreya or Mikan L'Hava. And in the context of the Gemara in Shabbos, namely, Hadar Kiblu B'Meach HaShverosh, it would be more satisfying, rationally, I'd feel much more comfortable if we said it works l'mafreya. Because we don't want to suggest that for all these centuries, from the time that they declared Nasa v'Nishma up until and including Purim, they were in a state of Kofal Leim Arkegigas, and for all those centuries upon centuries, they were fulfilling the Torah out of a sense of compulsion. They were being forced and coerced to accept the Torah. It wasn't Ritzoni Lasas Ritzonecha. It would be much more attractive, although I have to admit much more revolutionary, to apply the principle, the mechanics of L'mafreya, of retroactive, and say that this whole process of Kimu V'Kimlu retroactively sheds a light and reveals the nature of Nasa V'Nishma. Meaning there may have been elements of the community of Israel that required Kofaleim Arkegigas, but the bulk and the mainstay of the Jewish nation were Nasa V'Nishma. And that's all borne out by the Kimu V'Kivlu, by the Hadar Kiblu of Bimei HaShverosh of Purim, but basically it's Megala Milsel Mafreya. It reflects retroactively on the original Nasa V'Nishma, that it was really done as a matter of true, genuine, sincere desire. It's a reflection of the neshama of Klal Yisrael. And here I want to mention another issue that came up between me and Dr. Shmuel Dov Harris, my chavrusa. We were discussing the question of what actually is the nigal, what entity is experiencing redemption when it's Omer Dover B'Shem Omro. And I frankly thought that you are redeeming the person by allowing him to, so to speak, reclaim his possession over his Maimar, over his Dibur. So it's the human being, in this case the Bala Maimar, who's experiencing Geula. And in the case of Nasa V'Nishma Hadar Kiblua, it's Klal Yisrael the Gavra of Klal Yisrael are experiencing Geula, because they reconnect to the Maimar that they were cut off from, that they were alienated from, because of the Kafaleim Arkegigas, namely the Nasa V'Nishma. However, my Chavrusa pointed out that if you read the language of the Pachad Yitzchak, he writes that Shoresh Shal Adibur is Amiris Dov B'Shem Omro Hi Achzoras Ha'anaf L'Shoresh, which means that it's restoring the Dibur to the Bala Dibur. And it sounds like the Pachad Yitzchak understands that the Dibur itself, the Amiras Dover, is an entity. It's like a living personality. It's like when we say a Hadron and we speak to the Masecht itself, Hadron Alecha Masechta Chagiga, and it's almost like the Masechta speaks, and it has its own personality. Now that personality, that Maimar, was completely cut off from its Shoresh. And by Omer Dov B'Shem Omro, we take the Maimar and we bring it back to its source. We are really redeeming the Maimar itself. And that's the Geula. So who's the Nigal? Who's the one? Or what is the entity that experiences Geula redemption? It is the Maimar. It is the speech itself. It's the Cheftza, not the Gav. And we do find that Torah itself is considered like a Cheftza in many different ways. In the Kinnis of Tisha B'Av, it's throughout the Kinnis, you know, Torah, Chigri, Sak, the Torah itself is mourning. And the Masechta Nedarim, the Masechta Shvuos, Mi Yafli Lanu, in Mi Tein Rosh Yimayim, it says, Mi Yafli Lanu Nedarim U'Shvuos. We're talking about the fact that these Masechtos are so exiled, so much in exile, and now we have to redeem them. But be that as it may, whichever way you go, there certainly is a tremendous experience here when a person is quoted by his name. You know, the person is the Bala Maimar. Chazal speak about the dead. That if you say something over the name of someone who's deceased, is Fasav Dovros Bekever. When you transmit the Torah in the name of someone who's no longer alive, you resurrect him from the dead, so to speak. It's a tremendous chesed that you do for the deceased. Everyone wants to feel that they have made a contribution, and they don't want to feel that death is the final, you know, what we call stimas hagolel, and they no longer can make a contribution. But in Torah, a person's Torah is continuously taught and transmitted even well long after his death. In that sense, the Chachamim who teach us Torah are still alive. And maybe you could say that maybe Dover Liolam, maybe Gula Liolam, in the case of Omer Dover B'Shem Omro, is also in a sense bringing that person alive. I mean, even if he's still physically alive, but giving him more life by connecting his Torah to him. Chazal say the Gemara in Kiddushin that a Talmid Chacham Shemach Al Kvodu Kvodu Moch, because Torah Dileihu. He owns the Torah. He's Baal Abas over his own Torah. He possesses it. And he can decide what to do with it. But that's only if it's clear cut that that Torah is his. If the Torah is out there, but nobody knows, has any clue that it's so-and-so's Torah, you know, there's no longer recognizably Torah delay, it's his Torah, then the person is basically in Golus. He's been muted. He can't speak. Because anything he says is taken away from him. It's ripped away from him. It's attributed to some other person, some other source. So when we attribute the Dibur back to the Baal HaMaimer, we're being Goel, not only the Dibur, that for sure, but we Goel the Baal HaDibur. Because he's in a state of alienation, of being alienated, because he's not impacting, his Torah is not being taught. Or even if it is taught, it's being taught as a Chefetz, but not related to him as a Gavra. Anyway, just to swing back to the Pachad Yitzchak, the bottom line is that when we speak about Kol HaOmer Dover Shem Omro, maybe Gul Olam is derived from Esther and Mordechai, and it's connected specifically to Purim, we understand very well that Purim is the celebration of Hadar Kiblua B'mei HaShverosh, to repossess, reclaim ownership on Nasim and Ishma, throwing out our Modah, with Ratzon HaTov, Ritzoneinu L'Aseh Ritzonecha, we accept upon ourselves the mitzvahs, and of course the mitzvahs of Purim, and that's the key move of Kiblu that gives Geula to the statement of Klal Yisrael, of Nasim and Ishma, that was always hanging in there in a state of exile, because Nasim and Ishma is Modar Rabbalo Raisa. And the presentation ends with the Pasuk Vatomer Esther L'Melech B'Shem Mordechai, and this was part of the process of Geula, and it's not coincidental that we find that Dafka, because of Hadar Kiblua, the Geula of Mevi Dover Liomro, of going back to the Shorish of the Neshama and connecting the Dibur and the Maimer to that Shorish, that is in a sense the very essence or the climax of Purim, of Kimu V'Kiblu. Let's go on to Inyan Chaf Hei. And we begin with a pasuk in the 9th chapter of Esther, V'nafochu asher yishlitu ha'yehudim hema b'sonehem. And if you have any sort of sensitive ear, even a half-sensitive ear, and you want to answer the question, well, what is the main point of this pasuk? What is great about this experience? The answer could be one of two things. It could be Yishlitu Ayehudim Heim Sonehem. That itself was a major miracle. Hashem intervened and allowed the people of Israel to take revenge against their enemies. But that itself maybe would not really do the trick. You have to add something else. V'nafochu. V'nafochu means that it was converted. It was transformed. The real chiddush of this pasuk of Asher Yishlitu HaYehudim Hema B'Soneihem is the fact that there is not just a control of the Jews. You know, they have, so to speak, the sovereign rulership over their enemies. But going back to the beginning of the pasuk, Asher Yishlitu HaYehudim Hema B'Soneihem. That here our enemies were trying to kill us, and everything is turned upside down, and we're killing them. The victim turns on his aggressor and strikes back. And guess what? Successfully.
That's Menafochu. That's the special miracle, which is certainly being commemorated here on Purim. So in order to understand the significance of Venafochu in the context of Hema Yishlutu Besoneim, we want to look at the Maral in his work on Purim, on Megillah, called Or Chadash. And what the Maral establishes is that the Venafochu of Purim should be seen or connected to the Parsha of Edim Zomimim. And there the Torah says, Vasisam lo kasher zoma. Because let's just think about it. A mashal for Edim Zomimim, who designed and schemed, and we give him the punishment of Vasisam lo kasher zomam, is the Pasuk in Mishlei. I call it the boomerang theory. The Pasuk in Mishlei Chavav says, Zorek Evan Elov Toshuv. What does it mean? You throw a stone. You put an energy force into the stone. And you send it in a certain direction. If left alone, the stone will continue infinitely. It will never stop. If it comes bouncing back, it's changed its direction. That also perhaps is a result of your force. But you have to assume the missing piece of the puzzle. Why doesn't it continue endlessly in the way, in the direction that you sent it? It's because it met up with some sort of barrier that changed its direction. So the koach is there. But now that koach turns around and sends the stone flying towards you in a different direction. This pasuk can be applied to our case of Venafochu. In the case of Venafochu, our enemies were after us. Haman's Gzeirah Lahara Lahashmin Lahara Gliabit. That was the decree. And you can imagine all the forces that would attack us. But yet things turn around and they go in the opposite direction. And instead the enemies themselves are destroyed. The only possible conclusion is that the energy force met up against something else. Some barrier, like in the marshal of the stone that hits up against the wall and then comes boomeranging back, bouncing back. And it means, as he calls it in the Pachad Yitzchak, Ha'ispashtus Ha'yishora Nimnasi. It means that the continuous direction of that stone is impossible because there's a barrier there waiting for it to fling it in the other direction. And that's exactly what happened in the Shlitas HaYehudim B'Soneim, and the fact that the Jews were able to turn around that force against them, Venafochu, and send it back and destroy their enemies who wanted to destroy us. And the reason for this is, what is that barrier that takes all these forces against us and flings them so that they boomerang back in the opposite direction? It's Netzach Yisrael Lo Yishaker. And if you take a look in Shmuel Aleph, you will see that the theme of Netzach Yisrael is that by the very existence and the very essence of Klal Yisrael, anyone who tries to destroy the nation of Israel is going up against the brick wall. That is the Mania, that is the prevention, the barrier. And therefore, since the destruction of Klal Yisrael is impossible in reality, therefore we have Netzach Yisrael that forms the barrier that will send back Venafochu, all those forces, to topple our enemies. And here the Pachad Yitzchak adds a certain note at the end of his presentation. He says that the eternal nature of Klal Yisrael, of Netzach Yisrael, means that it is completely excluded, mufka, from what he calls midos v'shirim, something that's infinite and eternal, cannot be measured, it cannot be circumscribed. The simcha of Yontif, in general, when we talk about other Yomim Tovim, there is a measurement, there's a midah, a mishkal, there's a shir, there's an end to it.
But Simchas Purim has no shiurim. It keeps going and going. And that is the nature of the existence of Klal Yisrael. It has no shiurim, it's netzach. It's eternal and continues endlessly. The simcha of the existence of Klal Yisrael is a simcha that's completely mufka, that completely doesn't lend itself to any shiurim, to any bounds, any circumscribed receptacles that contain it. It's endless simcha. And that's the simcha, the unique simcha of Purim, because what Purim is all about is Netzach Yisrael. And that's the Vanafochu that sends these energy forces back against our enemies in the boomerang theory. Let's take a look at Inyan Chavav, and we begin with a Pinkas Yom. What it means is that a person keeps a ledger, and one of those who serve Hashem, we call it one of the Chachmei Havoda, probably back in the time of the yeshiva, kept a ledger, he kept a diary, and he wrote in his diary the following. This was his motto, so to speak. Lo tam tam nefesh mishlo nisach limshol betavoso. If you want to taste the taste of a soul, and it's the infinite taste, the best taste that you can constantly taste, you can only do so if you face the challenge and you overcame that challenge. If you have an inner conflict and you succeeded, you triumphed in subjugating your desire, your unbridled desire, you were able to control and discipline that taiva, that sense of achievement and triumph is the quintessential, it's the pinnacle of any sort of tam nefesh, of a taste that a soul could experience. And this statement, written down in the ledger of one of the Chachmei Avoda, indicates that he was a person who had a very sensitive and profound emotional feelings with regard to Avodas Hashem. What this statement that was written in his Pinkas really means is that there are many different pleasures that we can have in life, but the greatest pleasure of them all is a pleasure that's us, that's essential, that's inherent. And that is triumph. A person has a craving, a desire to succeed, to overcome his challenges, defeat his enemies, whether it be a physical battle on the battlefield, the sense of victory, or whether it be an internal battle against when one is struggling against the forces within him, the taivos. We mentioned in the previous Maimer, the Gemara in Brachas Daf Yud Zayin, that indicates that there are two things, two barriers that prevent us from really reaching Ritzoneinu Lasos Ritzonecha. One of them is Shibud Malchus, that's an external barrier that prevents us from reaching Ritzoni Lasos Ritzonecha. There are also internal barriers. The Gemara there compares it to Chametz Shebe'isa. Chametz is something internal. And here too, in the great triumph against one in one's internal struggles, that is a mili taiva on a whole different plane. The pleasure and the desire for triumph is absolutely unique, because all other triumphs and victories are to achieve something that's external, that's not myself. But here, within the context of my craving to triumph in my own personal struggle, that desire for victory is myself. It's me. It's not something external. In other words, in every other pleasure in life, we distinguish between the person and the object of his pleasure. There's the gavra, who enjoys the pleasure, and there's the chefta, which is being enjoyed. In the case of one who succeeds, who has a tremendous desire to succeed, and he does succeed, that pleasure doesn't separate between the gavra and the chefta. The gavra and the chefta are one and the same. The ani, the I of the person, represents the desire of that person to succeed, to fulfill this craving and desire to achieve nitzachon. That mili tavas nitzachon represents the ani. It's the hargashas koach ani shelo. It's the atmius of a person, the very essence of the person. When a person desires success and victory, that is merely an expression of the taiva, of the tremendous craving for a person to feel that he has tkifus hakoach in and of within himself. His powers are strong; they overcome any impediments from within, any static that prevents success. So therefore, we can define hanos nitzachon as the hanah of the gavra and the chefza, one and the same. It's hanah shel gavra v'chefza yachad, together as one integrated whole. Those who will understand on a deeper level the pleasure, the pure pleasure of success, and compare that pleasure to other pleasures in the world, will appreciate that the pleasure of success is not like other pleasures. It doesn't come in a bolo al yidei zedovershu misanig olav. It's not a pleasure that comes from an object which he takes for pleasure. No, it comes from his own ani, his own anochi, his own self, because his own self and his very essence is the desire for success. And that success represents the atzmius of a person, the anochi of a person. It's not a chefza that's external to the person, it's the person himself. And in the light of this introduction, perhaps we can understand that we're talking about nitzachon l'shem nitzachon. This craving and this desire for success means that success becomes an end to itself. What is the nature of this nitzachon? If we compare and contrast the classical nitzachon, we'll call it the din kloli, the kloliistic nitzachon, to this specific unique nitzachon of a person who overcomes his inner struggles and his desires, and he curbs them and he disciplines them. In the first case, the classical nitzachon means that there is something out there that's an anti-force that prevents a person from achieving his goal. In that case, the success is merely to remove the michshal, to remove that external stepping stone or barrier. And the sense of nitzachon really is just secondary. It's a byproduct of achieving the goal of removing this michshal. When a person has removed the ma'akev, he gets nitzachon, but his hanah is not so much identified with the nitzachon itself. However, there's an entirely different type of nitzachon that we're talking about. We're not talking about removing some sort of external barrier that prevents a person from achieving a goal and getting to where he wants to get to. We're talking about, again, to repeat what we saw in the Rishimos, lo tam tam nefesh mishlo niseach limshol bitavosol. Limshol bitavosol, that's the nitzachon. We're not talking about some sort of soul that achieves this mitzvah, that ma'asim tovim. For sure, that's called pleasure in this world. That's a spiritual oneg. And he acquires and possesses for himself a whole list of mitzvos. But still, the tainug, that pleasure, doesn't really penetrate into the very nefesh, into the very kishkis, or the pit of the nefesh. He calls it the tahoma shel nefesh. But when a person struggles with his own taivas haguf, he's struggling within himself, such a person, when he succeeds, when he subdues his own taivas haguf, he tastes a ta'am of his own nefesh. That ta'anug of nitzachon is really the anochi, it's his own self. It's not just removing some external barrier. a person recreates himself. As we said before, the Gavra and the Chefta are one together, and the Oneg is tremendous. Mitzvahs of Ma'asim Tovim bring a person into a state of Oneg, that's true, because he has acquired a mitzvah, but it's external to his very essence. Only when a person faces the challenge, he confronts the hismodidus, you know, that confrontation with his own taivas haguf, and he's able to subjugate that taivas haguf and control it, then does he taste the anochi of his own self. And that's what the Bala Pinkos that we said before, that Chacham the Oved, who felt a very deep hargosha, he wanted to say that the Te'imas HaNefesh requires Moshel B'Tavaso. And this may shed a light on the difference between the success of Klal Yisrael, the Nitzachon of Klal Yisrael against the Umos, and the Nitzachon of Klal Yisrael against Amalek. With regard to the other Umos, the victory, the success, means to remove a barrier, a michshal, a barrier, a stumbling block in the direction, in the road and the journey of Knesset Yisrael. But in the case of the victory over Amalek, we're talking about being machria la'om mila'om ye'ematz. You'll remember this pasuk, Bereishis Chaf Hei, and la'om mila'om is like a nation within a nation, within itself. Here the success is for the sake of success itself. La'om mila'om. The hakra, the final success, the final decision here is mi yamotz mi. Now, who's going to overcome whom? And when Knesset Yisrael comes out, you know, triumphantly, when they emerge as the triumphant, victorious nation, there's a taste here of the Anochi, of overcoming that Amalek, in a sense that's perhaps within us. The Amalek represents that taiva that's within us, that tries to control us. It's an inner struggle. It's the Chomit Shebe'isa. The Amalek represents the Halitenila, that part of the children of Yitzchak, the twins that are so similar yet so different, as we've discussed in the past. And perhaps this would shed a light on the nature of Simchas Purim. The oneg, the pure pleasure that emerges, that comes into being because of a contact, not with some chefza that's outside of the person, where the simcha is somewhat toned down, but rather we're talking about an entirely different type of simcha. We gauge and we evaluate or weigh the simcha as it corresponds to the closeness between the barrier that's being removed and the person himself. To the extent to which a barrier that's far away, that success, that triumph of removing that barrier and overcoming it does not engender such an intense oneg and simcha. But the real mimamakim, the real depths, the special unique depths depths of emotion, of simcha, of nitzachon, the nitzachon is both gavra and chefta together at the same time. When the chefta itself is inherent in the gavra, and within this inner struggle, he, the gavra, achieves the anochi, that oneg, that triumph knows no bounds. It cannot be limited, because it's the person himself. As we say, Adam Karov Eitzel Atzma. It's the greatest kurva that a person could have is to himself. It's a kurva b'lig vul. It's endless. And the oneg that a person experiences when he achieves his own atzmius is endless. He reaches the tahom, as we said before, the kishkis, of feeling himself. That's what Nitzachon means, to feel yourself, to be one with yourself. And that pleasure is immeasurable. It's infinite. It cannot be put into a box and limited. It cannot be measured. And therefore, when we, Klal Yisrael, enter into the simcha of our victory over Amalek, that simcha knows no bounds. And that's why the Gemara tells us in Masechet Megillah, Daf Zayin Amud Beis, Adlo Yada. Adlo Yada means the simcha of this particular day is not something that you can put into a box, that you can call it a Dover Sheish Bo Kids for. You know, it's limited. It's not limited. Simchas Yontif of Purim, as opposed to all the other Simchas Yontif of any other Yontif, is unlimited. It's Adlo Yada. There's no gvul, there's no boundaries, because it's the ultimate simcha, the ultimate experience of nitzachon, nitzachon over oneself, of li'om mil'om yematz. I don't know if we'll have time to do inyan chav zayin, just a little bit of an introduction. And we begin here with a pasuk at the very beginning of Sefer Vayikra. The pasuk says, Vayikra el Moshe. And Chazal tell us in the Medrash Rabbah, at the beginning of Vayikra, that even though Moshe Rabbeinu, who was so great in his perception, in his insight, as Chazal say, Nehirin lo kol razei olam, he understood all the secrets of this world. For example, in the last half of Sefer Shmos, we have the Melechus HaMishkan with so many details about how to structure the Mishkan, and each one of these details and each one of these Kelim represent a different one of the Razi, all of the secrets, the Kabbalistic insights into the nature of existence and universe. Nevertheless, that great Moshe Rabbeinu at the beginning of Vayikra is not able, he doesn't have license to enter in and encounter Hashem. And the Chachamim say on this pasuk Vayikra Moshe, Imaya nichnas b'li kriya, if he would have entered without Hashem Vayikra summoning him, Hoysa olav tainah shel talmid chacham b'li das, he would be like a scholar who has no knowledge, no understanding, no wisdom. He, Moshe Rabbeinu, with all his greatness and his insights and his wisdom, had to wait until Hashem would summon him, would call him in. And this can be explained based on a Gemara. The Gemara tells us in Tainis, Mipnei ma tiknu avdola b'chonin adas, and you'll also find this in the Yerushalmi in Brachos, why did Chazal institute this new takana, this new established embellishment of tefillah through Avdolah, and dafka to place it into Chonin Adas? And the answer is, im ein das, havdolah minayin. How would a person know to differentiate between one thing and another unless he has das, unless he has intelligence? And this is something that we've discussed on many occasions. The skula, the very essence and unique nature of das as a very special concept, is what we call his kashrus or his tavkus. Right, the pasuk says, "Vehaadam yoda es sora es chava ishto." Yoda yedia means an intimacy, a connection, a dveikus, a his kashrus. There's something inside something, and it's hidden away, but your ability to connect into that concealed concept is das. And a person really doesn't know how to separate himself from something that's not relevant to him, that's not part of his experience. Person has to have the wisdom and the insight to appreciate that there are certain things that don't belong to him, that are not on his radar skin. They're totally far away from him. And if he doesn't know to separate himself from those things that aren't shayach to him, then in the flip side, he doesn't know how to connect to things that are shayach to him. If we see a person, on the other hand, who knows, has the ability, with all his koichos, to integrate, to identify, and embrace something that's shayach to him, then that's the same person who can appreciate and activate the hafrasha to separate himself from something that's not relevant to him. And when Chazal say im ein das havdola minayin, what they really mean to say is that Moshe entered with a kriya when he was called and summoned by Hashem. If he would have entered without such a summons, then it would prove that he doesn't know how to separate himself from places that are not clearly his, that are not belonging, they're not on his, you know, sphere of influence, his radar screen. And that would have been a taina that a Talmud Chacham is one who doesn't have das. When the kriya came, when the summons came calling Hashem, Hashem calling out to Moshe, it became clear that this place now is shayach to Moshe Rabbeinu. It's a makom that Moshe Rabbeinu has shayach, has a yachas, a relationship to. And therefore, Moshe is able to enter in there. Now, what makes Moshe so great? The fact is that before he got the summons, his das understood very well the koch of Avdola, that he has to separate himself from that place. And therefore, once he had the kriya, his das now is able to connect, to be dovek to that place. Because again, only a person who knows how to separate himself from what's not his knows how to connect himself to that which is his. And therefore, when the pasuk says, "Vayishma es hakol midaber elav," which is a pasuk later on in the Torah, in Sefer Bamidbar, he hears the voice that's calling out to him. It means that a Talmud Chacham who really desires his heart more than anything else is a Mavakesh Hashem. He desires to come close to Hashem. There's always a whisper in his ear that says, be suspicious. Maybe you're pushing yourself into a place that's beyond your sphere. Ulai nidchak lemakom lemala mirosha. Maybe it's above his head, so to speak. And such a Talmud Chacham would separate himself from something which isn't shayach to him. And therefore, he waits. As Moshe says, Vayishma Sakol, he waits to hear the voice. Those who push themselves into places where they don't belong are really demonstrating that they don't have the Koach Hadas. They don't have what we call the school of Havdalah to separate themselves from places where they shouldn't be. However, let's talk about Purim for a minute. And in contrast to what goes on the rest of the year, Purim is unique. It's different than the rest of the year. At the moment of Simchas Purim, we have a new light, so to speak, that illuminates Purim. A new essence that emerges only on Purim, one day of the year. Because what was Purim, and what was the development of the miracle of Purim? You remember that Esther responds to Mordechai by saying, Lo nikresi lova alamelch. This is in the fourth chapter of Esther. I wasn't summoned. I wasn't called. Moshe, you remember, waits until he gets the summons from Hashem, the calling. Esther likewise waits in the shadows until she gets the calling. And lo nikresi lova alamelch, according to Chazal in the Medrash, the word melech is always an allusion to the melech malchei hamelachim. Hashem's name is not mentioned in the Megillah, but the Melech, which again in the plain meaning is a reference to Achashverosh, but on a deeper level, because Torah is paradise, you know, can be understood on so many different levels. The Gemara Megillah Tesvav Amid Beis tells us that whenever it says Melech Stam, it's an allusion to the Melech Malchei HaMelachim. And she, Esther, understands that now's not the time to go in. Lo nikresi lovel amelech. And she waits and she waits until the king calls upon her. So that hug of Purim really requires that if a person has a tremendous craving and desire for Kedusha, for sanctity, and it pushes him forward to go in, he's got something about Simchas Purim that allows him on this day of the year to push himself in there and to merit what we call Metzius Chen. Like she, Esther, found Chen, she found grace and compassion in the eyes of the king, in the eyes of Hashem. Our Mahalach on Purim is that we find favor in the eyes of Hashem. And therefore, Hashem, as the Melech, is Moshe Shavit Azov, as we saw in Achashverosh. And you'll ask, but why am I allowed to push with my craving for Kedusha and enter in? After all, if somebody goes in without Kriya, without being summoned, he's called someone that doesn't have Das. The answer is, that's what Simchas Purim is all about. Simchas Purim, there's no taina, there's no claim against someone that he's deficient because he's lacking in Das. Purim is the day of Adlo Yoda. There is no Das on Purim. And therefore the fact that you are pushing in without a summons and trying to go up higher and higher into Kedusha without being allowed to enter into or called and invited into those places. So what are you going to tell me? That's indicative of the lack of Das? Who cares about the lack of Das? Purim itself is the holiday, which is Adlo Yoda, which is not held back by the normal restrictions of the whole year of Das, because Purim is the Moshit Lo Sharvit Azov. It's the ability to enter in, to push new grounds of Kedusha and a relationship to the Melech Malchei Hamelachim. So Yiratzon, let's end our discussion today with a plea, a prayer on our lips that this coming Purim, which is fast and approaching, we should have the Shtokikus to Kedusha that pushes us in and in to enter and penetrate beyond all the restrictions and to achieve that level of Adlo Yoda, of a closeness to the Melech. We should all be zocher that the Melech should be Moshe to us, the Sharvit Hazov, Kein Yiratzon.